माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी सुषुरानंदना ब्रज जनरंजना यशोदानंदना ब्रज जनरंजना यामुन तीरावनचारी यामुन तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोरानंदना ब्रज जनरंजना यशोरानंदना ब्रज जनरंजना यामुन तीरावनचारी यामुन तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तोत्र सत श्री श्रीमद विजवाय गये सदेशी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभु पार की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय निताय गो प्रेमानंदे हरे हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय ऑल ग्रेस द असेंबल्ड डिवोटी All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to Sri Sri Guru Gaurango. Dharma Prujita Kaita Vuttar Paramone Matsaranam Satam Vijam Vastava Matravastu Shivadam Tapatrayam Mulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimva Parayarishvara Sajyo Ridya Varujyate Tikriti Bishu Shri Shri Stakshana Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, The Glories of Devotional Service, text number 17. Word meanings, Tada, then, Purusha, the individual soul, Atmanam, himself, Kevalam, pure, Prakrite Param, transcendental to material existence, Nirantaram, non-different, Swayam Jyoti, self-effulgent, Animanam, infinitesimal, Akanditam, not fragmented. Tada Purusha Atmanam, Kevalam Prakrite Param, Nirantaram Swayam Jyotir, Animanam Akanditam, Tada Purusha Atmanam, Kevalam Prakrite Param, Nirantaram Swayam Jyotir, Animanam Akanditam. Anima-namakanditam Dara-purusha-atmanam Kevalam-prakrite-param Nirantaram-swayam-jyotir Anima-namakanditam Tada Purusha Atmanam Kevalam Prakrite Param Nirantaram Swayam Jyotir Animanam Akanditam Tada Purusha Atmanam Kevalam Nirantaram Swayam Jyotir Animanam Akanditam Tada Purusha Atmanam Kevalam Prakrite Param Nirantaram Swayam Jyotir Animanam Akanditam Tada Purusha Atmanam Kevalam Prakrite Param Nirantaram Swayam Jyotir Animanam Akanditam Translation. At that time, now this refers to the previous verse, so then we should read that. When one is completely cleansed of the impurities of lust and greed produced from the false identification of the body as I and bodily possessions as mine, one's mind becomes purified. In that pure state, he transcends the stage of so-called material happiness and distress. In today's verse, at that time, the soul can see himself to be transcendental to material existence and always self-effulgent, never fragmented, although very minute in size. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the state of pure consciousness or Krishna consciousness, one can see himself as a minute particle non-different from the Supreme Lord. As stated In Bhagavad Gita, the jiva, or the individual soul, is eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Just as the sun's rays are minute particles of the brilliant constitution of the sun, so a living entity is a minute particle of the Supreme Spirit. The individual soul and the Supreme Lord are not separated, as in material differentiation. The individual soul is a particle from the very beginning. One should not think that because the individual soul is a particle, it is fragmented from the whole spirit. Mayavad philosophy enunciates that the whole spirit exists, but a part of it, which is called the jiva, is entrapped by illusion. This philosophy, however, is unacceptable, because spirit cannot be divided like a fragment of matter. That part, the jiva, is eternally a part. As long as the Supreme Spirit exists, his part and parcel also exists. As long as the sun exists, the molecules of the sun's rays also exist. The jiva particle is estimated in the Vedic literature to be 1/10,000th the size of the upper portion of a hair. It is therefore infinitesimal. The Supreme Spirit is infinite, but the living entity, or the individual soul, is infinitesimal, although it is not different in quality from the Supreme Spirit. Two words in this verse are to be particularly noted. One is nirantaram, which means non-different or of the same quality. The individual soul is also expressed here as animanam. Animanam means infinitesimal. The Supreme Spirit is all-pervading, but the very same spirit is the individual soul. Akhanditam means not exactly fragmented, but constitutionally always infinitesimal. No one can separate the molecular parts of the sunshine from the sun. But at the same time, the molecular part of the sunshine is not as expansive as the sun itself. Similarly, the living entity, by his constitutional position, is qualitatively the same as the Supreme Spirit, but he is infinitesimal. Om jñānati mirāntasya jñānāñjana shalākaya chakṣurunmilitamena tasmai śrī gurve namaha śrīla prabhupāda ki jaye. This is practically our first lesson in Krishna consciousness, but it's not an easy one, actually. We talk about the jiva, or the atma, or the soul. I remember the first time I read Bhagavad Gita, all these different words for the same thing, the living entity, the living being, the atman. Are these all the same thing? Or what? So we use different terminology to refer to it. The word soul, of course, the word soul is, that's a difficult one, because people have all different kinds of ideas of what soul is. I was raised as a Catholic, so in our, the idea there, at least what I got growing up and studying the religion, was a soul was kind of a thing separate from you, actually. It was almost like some kind of scorecard. If you were good, it was all white. If you were bad, it was black or dirty. It's just something that you own, like this soul. So they don't have this stark duality that we have between the difference between the soul and the body. The soul, or the self, from their point of view, is actually the body and body, mind, spirit, you might say, the three somehow coming together. What that seems to imply, that they're so attached to the body that they make it part of the philosophy. Yes, I am this body. So our very first lesson is, no, you're not that body. So that's what we're hearing about here. You can actually come to the point of realizing this. Someday, I hope, in some future lifetime, that will become a reality. Anyway, so here we're hearing some of the characteristics of the soul. In this verse, there are several words specific. When you want to know something, there are two kinds of characteristics: sarup lakshana and tatashta lakshana. So sarup lakshana is really what the thing is in itself, in its essence. And tatashta lakshana is maybe its activities, what it produces, things that aren't related to, just like an ordinary person. You can say somebody's name and a certain image comes to mind. You think, oh, that's the sarupa lakshana of that person. I know what this person looks like. But you may not know the tatashta lakshana. You may not know what the person likes to eat or what they do or how much they sleep in a day or so many things. The tatashta lakshana. They also define the person, but they're not the essential part of the person, you know, speaking in bodily conception. So similarly with the soul, there's surup lakshana and there's tatashta lakshana. There are some things that, what is the soul actually when you get right down to it? And then there are things that are related to the soul. Now Jiva Goswami goes into this quite elaborately in the Paramatma Sandarbha. Paramatma Sandarbha is his third Sandarbha. First is the Tattva Sandarbha, where he lays out the epistemology, how he's going to explain the absolute truth, the Tattva. Then he talks about Bhagavan, because at the end of Tattva Sandarbha, he brings in the Vedanti Tattva Vidas verse, the three aspects to the absolute truth, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So first he talks about Bhagavan, then he talks about Paramatma. So the third Sandarbha is Paramatma Sandarbha. And when he's talking about Paramatma Sandarbha, then he has to talk about Atma at the same time. Paramatma Tattva and Atma Tattva are related because, as Prabhupada has explained to us in his purport today, there's an eternal relationship between them. As Prabhupada would say, we are all part and parcel of Krishna. It was just recently this occurred to me. I don't know, I think I mentioned this in my last class, but I'll mention it again. A lot of times we're part of Krishna, so you may think, well, Krishna is everywhere. You might even think his form is everywhere, which it is, actually. It's localized for his leelas, but it's also everywhere. Just like when Mother Yashoda, one of the amazing things about Mother Yashoda being able to tie Krishna was, how can you tie Krishna? He has no beginning or end. He's unlimited. So you might think, well, I'm part of Krishna's form like that. We're part of Krishna. But we're not actually part of Krishna, because that's Krishna's swarup. We're not part of Krishna's swarup. We're part of Krishna's energy. We're part of the tatashta shakti. So that's how we're part of Krishna. We're part of Krishna's marginal energy, and Krishna is non-different from his energy. So we're not part of Krishna's swarup. Actually, Krishna's eternal associates in the spiritual world, they're especially expansions from the swarup. That's represented by Gadadhar Pandit in the Panchatattva. And of course, we're connected to Srinivas Acharya because he represents the tatashta shakti. So there's a difference between, you know, these eternal Mother Yashoda and Krishna's eternal cowherd boyfriends and so on. So we can never become them, actually. Actually, for years in Krishna consciousness, I didn't know this, actually. I thought that you could actually become, that's what our goal was, to become another Nanda Maharaj or another, you know, one of the famous cowherd boys. Because I thought, well, Krishna's unlimited. There's unlimited Krishnas in one sense. So, I can be Nanda Maharaj too. It wasn't until some years later until the 10th canto came out that I realized, oh, you can't actually be Nanda Maharaj. I wasn't at that level yet, that's for sure. I was thinking, it's probably written somewhere in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in a purport, but somehow, you space out and you read sometimes. Something doesn't sink in. So anyway, we're part of the marginal energy, the tashta shakti. And that's also, actually, when we talk about, what is Krishna's sarup and his lakshana, and his tatashta lakshana, part of his tatashta lakshana is that we are expansions of him. He has his energy. He has energy. That's part of explaining who Krishna is. He has his swayam rupa, and then he has his energies that expand. So some of the characteristics of the jiva are given in this verse today. I'll just mention, go over some of these words again. Kevalam means pure. Kevalam is related to the word kaivalya, or kaivalya is related to kevalam. It means one, really. So one, when something is one, then it's pure. There's nothing mixed into it. So the jiva is like that. There's nothing mixed in. We're not the body and the soul mixed together. Prakriti param, of course, transcendental to prakriti. Krishna brings this out in verse 6 of the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There's a material energy, which is my separated energy. But then, beyond that, there's the jiva, which is another kind of prakriti. Of course, that's also called pada prakriti, which is similar in phrasing to this. So nirantaram, Prabhupada translates here as non-different. He also mentions it in the purport. Swayam Jyoti, self-effulgent. So we are also effulgent, little tiny sparks. Prabhupada gives the analogy, we're little sparks of Krishna. Animanam infinitesimal. And akhanditam, not fragmented. Akhandadi, devotee in England, Prabhupada's disciple. Akhandadi means one whose consciousness is fixed, not splayed out. So I was going to touch on some of the of Jiva Goswami here. I have many pages here, so I won't get to them all, but I wanted to talk about these different characteristics. In Jiva Goswami, the characteristics of the Jiva, as he in the Paramatma Sandarbha, when he introduces the section where he talks about the Jiva, Jiva Goswami mentions that in the Padma Purana there's a list. I forget what the number is. 19, I forget what the number is. Anyway, and then he says, but besides this list, and he quotes the verse, actually, I have it here, maybe I won't read it, but he quotes the verse from the Padma Purana, but then he says, he quotes a scholar, a devotee, Acharya, from the Ramanuja Sampradaya, who compiled a similar list. And that's what he uses for his elaboration. He uses this other devotee's list. What's his name? Jamatri Muni, his name is. So his list is essentially the same as the one in Padma Purana, except he adds a few at the end. And these are very important ones, actually. So I may not get to them, so I'll mention them now. The three or four things that he mentions, actually, at the end of his list are that the jiva is gyatritva. Let's see if I can remember the terms. Anyway, I can't think of it. Anyway, the idea is that the jiva has knowledge itself. Now, you may think, well, obviously, we have knowledge. But there's a difference between knowledge and consciousness, even though and Prabhupada kind of mixes the two together. There's a difference. Knowledge really means awareness of something outside. Consciousness is more self-consciousness. And so we have jnanatva, kartritva, means we also have agency. In other words, the soul can do something. We may get confused about this in Bhagavad Gita because we have this verse that says we think that we're the doer, but we're not the doer. So sometimes we think, well, that means that we don't do anything. We just kind of sit there and nothing. It's all a dream. What's going on exactly? So the soul is active, but it acts through the body. So in the material world, it acts through the body and mind, because thinking is also a kind of activity. So it acts, but it acts through an instrument. And it also, in the spiritual world, it has an instrument too, but it's spiritual. So in a sense, there's a soul and a body, you might say, in the spirit, but they're one. So this is one of course, our paradoxical thing. We're the soul in the spiritual body, but we're not different from the body. But that's actually the way it works. So in the spiritual world, we act through the spiritual body, but that spiritual body is actually us. So if you can figure that one out, good luck. So anyway, this is the verse. Let me read this verse by Jamatri Muni. Let's see here. Okay, this is from Gopi Purananda. I've consulted a couple of different translations to this. This is from Gopi Purananda Prabhu was actually working on this. He wanted to do all the Sandarbhas. Actually, the BBT wanted him to do all the Sandarbhas. But he only got as far as he did Tattva Sandarbha and Bhagavat Sandarbha, which I edited, something like 12 years ago, and they still haven't published it. So I'm not sure what's taking so long. In any case, so he also started working on Paramatma Sandarbha, so at least he did some translations. Actually, I think he may have translated the whole thing, but he hadn't written a commentary. It's not easy to write a commentary on Jiva Goswami, believe me. It's really difficult. In fact, I study a book that has commentaries, and I still have trouble figuring out what he's saying. So anyway, somehow this is a really small point size. I don't know why, but anyway. So this is the verse. I won't read the Sanskrit. Actually, I'll get to the Sanskrit when I get to some of the examples. The soul, this is the way it begins. The soul is not a god. So it begins with anvaya and vyaktireka. There are two ways of explaining things. And we find this often in the Vedic literature, that you have the positive and the negative. Just like we say, always remember Krishna and never forget him. So I brought this up before. This just seems redundant. If you're always remembering, you're not forgetting. But this is a common practice in Vedic hermeneutic, explaining things or understanding things, the positive and negative. So sometimes the Vedas explain things in a positive way and sometimes in a negative way. That's the negative is called Vyatireka. So here's a little, it begins with some Vyatireka here. The soul is not a god, not a man, nor an animal, nor an immobile creature. He is not the body. Not, now, some of this will sound redundant, but there are fine differences in them, and probably too fine for my brain to understand, but there are some subtle differences between some of these things. He is not the body, not the senses, and not the mind, the vital air, or the intelligence. So, of course, we think we're all those. We may think, well, I'm not the body, but, well, I'm the mind, obviously, because, well, that's just who I am. But no, you're not. He is not inert matter. So he's not inert. Now, some of these things, anyway, I'll get into this. Nor is he subject to change. Nor is he merely a manifestation of consciousness. He is aware of himself on his own strength. He always appears the same and has an eternal identity. He is conscious and all-pervading. And his basic character is consciousness and bliss. Chidanandatmakam. He is the principal I who is separate in each material body. He is infinitesimal and always free from contamination. Among his innate qualities are his being a knower, a doer, and an enjoyer. I hear those terms I was trying to remember. Gyatritva, kartritva, and bhoktritva. Okay. So we have jnana, karta, and bhokta. The twa part means ness, N-E-S-S. This also you find a lot, there are a lot of words. So gyatritva, kartritva, and bhoktritva. So that means he's a knower, a doer, and an enjoyer, the jiva. So we're all enjoyers, so we can celebrate that. His inborn perpetual nature is a counterpart of the Paramatma alone. So this is Padma Purana doesn't mention this. These three things, knower, doer, and enjoyer, and that we're part of Paramatma. Which means that's how we get our qualities. They all come from Paramatma, actually. In fact, and now that probably should make this point, that we come from Paramatma, we don't come from Krishna. Now, of course, Paramatma is Krishna. But where... this is actually mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in one of the first chapters of the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And it's also brought out in Jiva Dharma quite clearly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions this, where expansions. The jivas, the conditioned, the tatashta jivas are expansions of Paramatma. Paramatma, of course, is one of the three Purushas. There's somewhat of a distinction. That's why we have Bhagavat Sandarbha and Paramatma Sandarbha, because there's some difference. Bhagavan is Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna's original form, his original sarup. But when he has something to do with the creation, then that's the Vishnus or the Purushas or Paramatma. They're also called Paramatma. So we're an expansion of this Paramatma. So that's why we have the qualities. So let's see here. So I'm going to go. Actually, before I do this, I want to. So we had a list today that we read in today's verse. We just went through this list. And I actually asked ChatGPT to come up with this. I have to confess. I said, what are all the qualities of the jiva that are mentioned in Bhagavad Gita? So first I gave kind of like a little essay. But then it said, but you can summarize it like this. So this is the list that it came up with, which I thought was quite interesting. You know, it's good at doing these kinds of things. Also makes mistakes, but... So it says here, it was titled, A Particularly Useful Summary by His Grace ChatGPT. It says, the descriptions in Bhagavad Gita 20, 20, and 23 through 25 are probably the most concentrated statement of the soul's characteristics in the chapter. So these are, then it's, he, I shouldn't say he, it, the robot. So the robot said, lists them like this by one word: unborn, eternal, everlasting, primeval, indestructible, uncuttable, incombustible, insoluble, undryable, indivisible, immovable, all-pervading, unchanging, imperishable, invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. So, actually, I'll just mention this because this comes up, this idea, sarvagata, all-pervading. So this is a head-scratcher for a lot of people. What does it mean that the soul is all-pervading? So the acharyas have different ways of dealing with this. In fact, this comes out in Paramatma Sandarbha also. So there are basically two ways. All-pervading, I forget whether it's which one says which, Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, they explain it in different ways. One of them says that it means all-pervading within the body, because that is a characteristic of the soul, that it's only in one place, but the consciousness goes all out. Now we take, one of the characteristics is that the soul is infinitesimal, or tiny, minute, and so on. But its consciousness is like a ray, just like a ray of sunshine, but it goes out all the way within the body. Now the Jains, you might be interested to know, think that the soul is according to the size of the body. So an ant has a little tiny soul, and if you're a giant, you have a really big soul. That's the way they think. Because they don't like the idea that the soul has like a effulgence kind of, like, consciousness going out. They just, no, the soul is the whole thing. So it matches the size of the body. So this is the idea of all-pervading. It pervades the body. And the other explanation is it's all-pervading because it's part of Paramatma. And Paramatma is all-pervading. So it's, in some sense, we share in the essence. Now, Prabhupada also explains, in at least in one place, where you can become almost as powerful as God. In fact, he says that about Lord Brahma, even the Jiva, Lord Brahma. He says in the matter of creation, he's as powerful as God himself. So, we don't become God, but we can get such great power that we're very similar to God. So this is also one explanation of this sarvagata. Paramatma is everywhere, so all pervasive, so the jiva can sort of tag along and say, all right, we're part of that. I'm with him. So we can say like that. So let's see. Where did I start here? Oh, I numbered my pages, and now I got them all mixed up. Oh, okay, here we go. So I was going to go through some of these on the list. It would take forever to go through all of them. So this is how Jiva Goswami attacks it. I forget to put the Anucheta numbers down, but that's not important. So this is how he gives that, he quotes that verse by Jamatri Muni, and then he goes through each one in the list. So this is the first one is Atma na devo na naro na tiryak stavaro na cha. Maybe you picked up a few of these words if you know any Sanskrit. Atma na devo, so the Atma is not a deva, na naro, not a human being, na tiryak, not an animal, and stavaro na cha. Stavaro means an immobile creature. So that's how he starts with that. So as he often does, then he gives some supporting evidence. Now he quotes extensively, of course, from the Bhagavatam. One thing I've noticed with Jiva Goswami, he quotes the Uddhava Gita a lot. He really quotes the Uddhava Gita a lot. So most of this evidence here comes from the Uddhava Gita, 11th canto. So he quotes a verse. He says that it's implied in this. These things that were just mentioned, he says, are implied in this verse. Now this is the first half of the verse. It's 11.3.39. This is, of course, our BBT translation. The spirit soul is born in many different species of life within the material world. Some species are born from eggs, others from embryos, others from the seeds of plants and trees, and others from perspiration. But in all species of life, the prana, the vital air, remains unchanging and follows the spirit soul from one body to another. So basically he's saying, this shows that we're not the body, so how could we be these things? We're not an animal, a god, a man, and so on. But then the very next verse says, na deho, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, that's right. Na deho nendriyam naiva mana prano nanapidi. He is not the body. Well, this is more or less the expansion. One of the things I noticed, and I was just studying these recently, sometimes Jiva Goswami doesn't quote another verse, but he quotes an earlier line in this Jamatri Muni's verse. He says, because basically he said this, so that would imply this also. So the proof is in the earlier part of the verse, more or less. Or logically, he's just explaining it logically. Actually, he explains in the beginning, you can explain things logically or by Shastra, but logic has problems, so we're going to use Shastra, basically. Of course, that's what Tattva Sandarbha is all about. So the translation, what I just said, he is not the body, not the senses, not the mind, the vital air, or the intelligence. Now again, of course, people, they think, they don't know what soul, they use the word soul, they don't know what soul is, they think it's something subtle, I guess, but, soul means, if you like a painting, then you have a soul or something, They don't know. They meaning, people in ignorance. So the next one is, here he quotes this verse to support that one, what I just read. Just as fire, this is also from the 11th canto, 11:10:8. Just as fire which burns and illuminates is different from firewood, which is to be burned to give illumination, similarly the seer within the body, the self-enlightened spirit soul, is different from the material body, which is to be illuminated by consciousness. Thus the spirit soul and the body possesses different characteristics and are separate entities. They have this principle in science. What is it called? I forget. But the idea is that the most elegant theories are very simple. So our idea that there's a soul within the body is a very simple idea. There's a living force within there, animating it. That's your consciousness. It's just so simple. At least for us, I hope we've gotten that. It sounds so intuitive, doesn't it? But it's not for a lot of people. What? I'm not my body? What? That can't be right. So people have all these ideas because they can't grasp the simple thing. I was listening to a lecture in Prabhupada. He's talking about this. How can they not, Prabhupada said, how can they not understand this? Prabhupada was practically jumping off the asan. How can they not? It's so obvious. Though it's not obvious to people because their brains are full of cow dung. So anyway, so we'll go on here. So the next one is na jado. You know this word jada? Jada, like jada bharat. It means dull or inert. So that's the idea. The jiva is not inert matter. He's alive. The soul is alive. So then he quotes, Jiva Goswami quotes again from the Uddhava Gita 11:13:27. Waking, sleeping, and deep sleep are the three functions of the intelligence and are caused by the modes of material nature. The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states and thus remains as a witness to them. Now this comes up a lot, actually, maybe because I hear about the 11th canto a lot, this idea of the three states of the intelligence, actually. They're states of the intelligence. Now, of course, intelligence is the next-door neighbor of the soul, so that means they're in some ways aligned also with the jiva. The jiva identifies himself with what the intelligence is doing. Just like in the Paranjana story, the King Paranjana is just following his wife around. She represents intelligence. Whatever she does, he does. When she ate, he ate, and so on, all these things. So we identify with the intelligence. But the intelligence, these are three things, and the fourth level is called Turiya. Turiya means the fourth. So there's a verse from in the Upanishads that talks about the Paramatmas being in the fourth, but the jiva is also in the fourth dimension when it's not in contact with this world, when it's Atma. Actually, I think Jiva Goswami makes this point. He says, usually the words that are used, when you use Atma, you're usually talking about the pure soul. When you're talking about, use the term jiva, you're usually talking about the jiva with all its upadis in this material world, or the Atma when it's being covered over by upadis. That terminology tends to be used in that way. So here's another one here. I want to get to the one about, we'll see. See how far I get. So the next one is Navikari. Nor is he subject to change. So the jiva doesn't change. So Jiva Goswami quotes again from Uddhava Gita 11.7.48. The various phases of one's material life, beginning with birth and culminating in death, are all properties of the body and do not affect the soul. Just as the apparent waxing and waning of the moon does not affect the moon itself, such changes are enforced by the imperceptible movements of time. So that's also a simple idea we try to tell people. We are the same person. Obviously, you have a different body. You're a completely different body. So it's not that you're a different person now just because your body has changed. It's not that you were a little baby and now you're middle-aged. No, you're the same, the conscious self within all of these things. So here's another one. This is the next one. Jnana matratbako na cha. Matra means only. So jnana matra. Here jnana means consciousness. Sometimes the word jnana means consciousness. Just like in the Vedanti Tattvavidas, Tattvam yas jnanam advayam. So the absolute truth is non-dual. I think probably maybe translates it as knowledge, but it actually means consciousness there. Because the word jnana is really a difficult one. It has several different meanings. I've pondered this one before. What do we mean when we say knowledge exactly? What is knowledge? Knowledge is something I have? Is it what's in a book? Is it data? What is it exactly? So it actually means different things. And one of the definitions, there are at least three different definitions in the Vedas, and one of them is the possessor of knowledge is also called jnana. You would think it would be jnani, but it's actually sometimes the word jnana means the soul itself. But here it says, jnana matra tiko na cha. It's not only jnana. It's not only consciousness. So this has implications. So let me read. So this is the verse that Jiva Goswami quotes. Maybe I'll stop here after this. Brahman, the eternal soul, was never born and will never die, nor does it grow or decay. That spirit soul is actually the knower of the youth, middle age, and death of the material body. So the idea here is that, anyway, I'll go on. Thus the soul can be understood to be pure consciousness, existing everywhere at all times. Everywhere meaning not one soul, but the soul is everywhere, and different souls. And never being destroyed. Just as the life air within the body, although one, becomes manifest as many, in contact with the various material senses, the one soul appears to assume various material designations in contact with material body. So I think the example may be a little hard for us to understand, to relate to. So sometimes there's only one prana, supposedly, but it's manifest through the different senses. So we what's the connection there? But somehow the prana, the one thing, if you don't have prana, then you can't use the senses. If there's no prana or life force or life air, then you can't see, you can't smell, you can't touch, you can't taste. So that's the idea. So it seems like they're different, just like the senses are different. So it's actually the prana acting through these different instruments. So it may seem like there's different pranas, but there's really just, it's all just one thing, one prana. That's the idea. So the soul, but this somehow this has to do with the soul is not merely a manifestation of consciousness. So this also brings in this idea that it's active and it's a knower and so on. So I won't go on, but actually in this verse, this is a really important one actually, but I'll just mention it. It was mentioned out that how the jiva is anu. The word was here in this verse today. Anu. Animanam, infinitesimal. So usually the word is anu. So in the Vedanta, something can be characterized as anu because it is finite, limited, and not all-pervading. Without the necessarily implying that it is a tiny material object. So I've always had trouble with this 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair, whether it's literal or not, but I was doing some research on that. One idea I came up with, okay, it's 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, but maybe you can think of it as a spiritual hair. So it has size, but I was thinking, just like in Goloka Vrindavan, so there's all different kinds of sizes there, right? But it's all spiritual. So there's spiritual size. So it's not really 1/10,000th the tip of a material hair on your head. The idea is, it's really trying to present to us the conception that you're not infinite, because that's what the Mayavadis think. They think we're infinite. So the counter-argument is, no, you're not infinite. You're a long ways from infinite. You're an infinite way away from infinite, because you're infinitesimal. You're as small as you can get. In fact, one of the definitions of Anu or Paramanu, which we also come across that term, actually in the Bhagavatam chapter about the time, the Paramanu. So the Paramanu is the smallest material particle. And it means so small that you can't divide it any further. That's as far as you... it doesn't have any parts to it. That's the idea. So still, my mind thinks, well, it's still a little thing, right? Can't you still cut it smaller and smaller and smaller? So that's why you get hung up if you start thinking in a material way. It's not material. It's a spiritual thing, and it's or like a spark. And it doesn't have dimensionality like we live in three dimensions. It doesn't have that kind of a three-dimensionality. So this whole idea of Anu. So that's why I just quoted this thing from this is actually from the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra is very fundamental, of course. This Bhagavatam is the commentary in Vedanta Sutra. But we take the Vedanta Sutra as absolutely authoritative, according to the Vaishnava commentators, of course, not Shankaracharya's commentation. So the Vedanta Sutra, again, says that Anu, which is what the jiva is, that we translate as infinitesimal or minute, it means that it's finite, not infinite. It's limited. It doesn't have unlimited power, and it's not all-pervading like Krishna is. So it's different questions. You know, questions come up. You think, well, the soul, it is actually some kind of entity. Actually, Jiva Goswami, which is interesting in the Tapasandarbha, he talks about it both as energy and substance. So this is kind of, you know, in modern physics, they talk about, I guess it's the photon or light is, or the, you know, the very substance of matter is both an energy and a wave. So that's actually what Jiva Goswami more or less says, that it's both vastu and it's shakti. Usually something that's vastu means a substance, and it has shakti as a characteristic, just like the sun emanates sunshine. But Jiva Goswami says that the jiva is both of those things simultaneously, just like the scientists say, it's both a particle and a wave, these fundamental constituents of the material energy. So we say, yes, at the bottom of everything, of course, Krishna also, because we say that Krishna is not different from his energy. So there's Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, and he has his energy, but they're also one. So anyway, so many things that can be said about the jiva, Paramatma can also be said about the jiva. So actually, I'll do one more thing. Prabhupada mentions this, although he doesn't mention the source, and one purport in the seventh canto, chapter 15, which is a very difficult chapter, actually. So 15th chapter, Narada Muni is speaking to Yudhishthira. He's finished the whole Prahlad, you know, the seventh canto is mostly about Prahlad Maharaj. And then at the very end, there's some more Leela and so on. Then there's some heavy philosophy at the end, really jnana, the last 15th chapter. So anyway, Prabhupada quotes this. It actually comes from the Chandogya Upanishad, and it's eight characteristics of the jiva. Now, actually, it's the way it's stated in the Chandogya Upanishad is the eight characteristics of the Paramatma. But, well, here's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says about the... He's mentioning it in his Jiva Dharma. And Jiva Dharma is made up of dialogues, mostly. Different sadhus, babajis, sannyasis, gurus, they're talking to their disciples. So in answer to a question, one of these sadhus says, he's talking about the jiva. There's a section about jiva tattva also in jiva. Well, jiva dharma means the dharma of the jiva. So obviously there's a lot about the jiva there. So in one point he says, a person should search out a Jivan Mukta. That means a liberated soul who's still within the body. It's called a Jivan Mukta, who is seen to possess these eight symptoms. Apahata Papa, free from all sinful activity, and the nescience of Maya. I'm reading this because this relates to, you know, this is the Jiva. When you're a self-realized Jiva, then you experience these things. Free from all sinful activity and the nescience of Maya. That's the first one, Apahata Papa. The next one is Vijara, free from the miseries of old age and decay. Vimrityu, has conquered death and rebirth. Vishoka, is beyond material happiness and distress. Vijighatsa, no longer desires material enjoyment. Apipapata, has no desire other than the service of the Lord. Satyakama, whose desires are always faultless and directed to the Supreme Truth. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is doing some purporting here. It doesn't literally say that. It just says Satyakama, which means his desires are always fulfilled, literally is what it means. But he translates it as whose desires are always faultless and directed to the Supreme Truth. So they're always fulfilled because that's the purport. And Satyasankalpa, that's the last one, whose wishes are always fulfilled by the grace of Krishna, he says. So this is, Prabhupada sometimes mentions, now in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a whole discussion with the Upanishads that's witnessed by the devotee who's traveling everywhere, all over the universe, and the Upanishads are having a little debate, and one of the debates is about mukti, liberation, this kind of thing, jivan mukta, or yeah, to be liberated, to become self-realized, in other words, to realize you're not this body, which Prabhupada mentions here in this purport. Or we're hearing about Kapila Muni, he's becoming self-realized. So there's a question of how great is that? Now there are places where Prabhupada says, this is a great thing, imagine, we're just reading these things. No more anxiety, wouldn't that be nice? No more old age, disease, death, no more rebirth. Hooray, that sounds really good. Give me some of that, I'll take it. But Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in that discussion, it says that that is infinitesimal compared to the joy of bhakti. Of course, Rupa Goswami makes the same point. Brahmanando bhavedi shirachi pararha duni grita naiti bhakti sukambode paramanu tilamapi. He says it's just like a drop compared to the ocean. That's the pleasure of just realizing yourself, which is really nice, actually. It's like a drop in the ocean. So we can't even conceive what the happiness is for the devotee in relationship to Krishna. The devotee, it's so intense. Of course, we hear that devotees are always crying. I was mentioning in a recent class when you read in these some of these books of the about Narottam and Srinivas and so on. And of course, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we also get some of it too. Devotees are sometimes always crying. They're just in so much, of course, it's not crying in misery, they're crying in intense happiness. So that it's so intense that the what one experiences in bhakti. And that, of course, we can do that. Now, one interesting thing, many interesting things in Jiva Dharma, the whole idea we think, why is this material world such a place of misery? Why is it like this? Can't Krishna just get us out of here or whatever? One thing that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, he says, it's all worth it. That suffering in this material world is all worth it because we're jivas and we can have that relationship with Krishna. It's all the suffering, you know, put together and consolidated and condensed down in the material world is nothing compared to the happiness that we're entitled to by Krishna's mercy because we're part of Krishna. So that's his way of dealing with it. It's like, just stop crying and just, you know, get with the program. You can be Krishna's devotee and enjoy unlimitedly an association with Krishna. So that's one of the characteristics of the soul, that we have that potential. Of course, Prabhupada stated it very simply. We're all eternally Krishna conscious. So that we're meant to do that, to have that relationship with Krishna. Okay, I went a little over time today. Okay, so I don't know if that helped anybody or just confused you all, but yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for an interesting class. You mentioned Srila Jiva Goswami, characteristic of the Jiva, Gyatritva, Kartritva, and Bhoktritva. I understand about the Gyatritva, knower, but at the same time you mentioned, probably quoting Krishna, that Jiva doesn't do anything in material world. So why the Jiva Goswami explained that he is a Kartritva and Bhoktritva? I don't understand that.
Yeah, that's actually one commentary I was reading is in one place that the commentator says, you know, the jiva is inactive. He used the term inactive. And then a little later, he said, you know, how the jiva is active, actually, but acting through the body. So that's the way I can reconcile the two things. That in one sense, it's inactive, because it doesn't directly, now we know asango hyayam purusha, the purusha, and this is one of the Upanishads. The Purusha here means the Jiva as opposed to Prakriti. So Purusha means the Jiva. So it says that Jiva is actually never connected to the material world. We're always at a distance. In fact, another example that's given is that the Jiva's activity is like a magnet drawing files of metal. So we're never actually connected. So in that sense, we're said to be inactive because we're not directly in contact. There's no direct engagement with the material energy. It's done in a more subtle way. Of course, ultimately, the Paramatma is involved, so everything goes through the Paramatma. So that's one way of looking at it. There's never any direct contact. The spirit and matter, they never actually come together. There's just an appearance of it.
So Jiva just desires, right? It doesn't do anything.
Well, it says that he's active, so, but again, you know, desire, but he's acting through the body. So the body is the instrument, the jiva is acting. Now how it's acting through it exactly, so again, this example is given, like a magnet, and it's not like the soul has little hands and, you know, making it like a glove, like a hand on a glove or something like that, you know, it doesn't work that way. Somehow it works in some subtle way, but he is active. And in fact, this is one of the arguments made about, you know, in the Vedanta Sutra, the argument is made, and also in the Bhagavatam, well, if the soul was inactive, if it didn't have agency, that's the word agency, if it didn't have agency, then what's the use of the Vedic injunctions? If the soul can't do anything, then what's the use of the Vedic injunctions telling you to do this and don't do that? So this is what our acharyas take as a kind of implication. Maybe it's not stated exactly how it works, but it's implied that we have agency. We can do something. Otherwise, you know, we're trying to do something now. We're trying to become Krishna conscious. So we have agency. It's not that we can't do anything. Yes, Ganga Narayan Prabhu.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for your class. It sounds like you were there when Sukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit.
It's amazing, isn't it? Parikshit Maharaj was fasting for 7 days. No food, no water, no sleep. And why? Because he was getting such ecstasy here in the Bhagavatam. He didn't even think about it. He was so absorbed in what Shukadeva Goswami was saying. Imagine the potency of Shukadeva Goswami. Huh?
So there's a couple of points I wanted to bring up. One is that in Jiva Dharma by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it says that the jiva, the marginal jiva souls, are generated from Mahavishnu.
Right.
You were saying there's only one Nanda Maharaj, so how could anybody else be Nanda Maharaj? But since Krishna appears in innumerable universes, somebody can also take on a position.
Mm. You sure about that? No, I think it's the same Nanda Maharaj. Krishna and his associates are in one, you might say. So just as Krishna can be anywhere. Now, we have this example in the Dwaraka Leela when Krishna got married. So Devaki and Vasudeva, they were at all the weddings and they all took place at the same time.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
See that. The other point is that jivas or tatastha shakti, some jivas are not marginal in the sense that they can fall down. They originally...
Yeah, they're nitya siddha and nitya bhutta jivas. So there are jivas existing eternally in the spiritual world. Yes. And they're eternally existing in the material world. Now this becomes a whole debate about, you know... Now one interesting is there's a verse in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita where it says, both the Purusha and Prakriti are anadi, beginningless. And our acharyas translate that literally as beginningless. So the Prakriti doesn't exist without the Purusha. Purusha here means the jiva. So that means at least some jivas have been here eternally in the material world, because the Prakriti is... Because you know, this... It's not that Krishna at some point started something. Everything is eternal. So there's always, you know, Mahavishnu is always breathing. He's eternally existing. He's always breathing out universes. So there's always Prakriti, sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. And there are always jivas. And the acharyas say that the connection between the Purusha and the Prakriti is also eternal. So, beginningless. So, literally beginningless. So this, you know, I don't want to get into the whole thing about did we fall from Vaikuntha, but I don't want to get into that. But anyway, the idea is that, they're both eternal. So they're eternal jivas in the material world and eternal jivas in the spiritual world. Besides the Krishna's, you know, internal expansions, the expansions of his self expansions, you can say. Those are the coward, you know, is the ones that we hear about, the Krishna's gopis and so on, and Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and so on. They're eternal, and nobody can take their job.
Some of the jivas are coming from the spiritual world to be part of Krishna's
Leela,
and some are being trained up and coming into the Leela.
Yeah.
So there is a difference.
But spiritually, you can come and stay home at the same time. You know, that's there's a difference. You can go to work and stay home at the same time. Okay, I don't want to go on. We're supposed to stop at 9 o'clock, so this could go on forever. We'll stop here. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.